You're still listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Still in studio with me is Nate, and on the line from Michigan with me is Persephone. We're going to talk a little bit now about Syria and specifically President Obama's new policy toward that. There's not a whole lot of new ground to cover because Persephone and I on the previous episode or one of the recent episodes did cover it in quite a bit of depth. I don't think our opinions have really changed very much. This is not a great policy, and it's not really going to solve anything. That's sort of our fundamental thesis there. There were two specific points, though, that I wanted to draw out of President Obama's speech and explain what I thought was a problem there that needed to be flagged. The first one is about this idea, and there was actually a Think Progress article also highlighting it, about the comparison that he made to Somalia and Yemen. These are two sites that he has conducted a whole bunch of airstrikes on during his presidency. I think George W. Bush started that as well in both of those countries, or at least in Somalia. Not mentioned was Pakistan, where President Obama dramatically increased and then eventually scaled back almost to none the airstrikes that were happening there. But Pakistan's a little bit of a different situation than Somalia and Yemen. I mean, arguably, it's actually a more apt comparison, but it's not the one that he made. So we're going to look at that. Basically, he was trying to use this as a comparison to reassure Americans to say that this is not going to be, you know, Iraq 3.0 or whatever, that, you know, we're not sending combat troops in. This is a limited operation. It's an air operation. It's targeting specific terror targets. And so this was supposed to reassure everyone that it's going to be fine. You know, we've been doing this in Yemen and Somalia. As the article in Think Progress pointed out, in Yemen, we've conducted dozens and dozens of airstrikes over a period of time since about 2010 or so, especially after the situation with that Nigerian bomber who tried to blow up the plane that ended up going to Detroit, you know, and that was directed by American Anwar al-Awlaki in al-Qaeda in Yemen, essentially, or al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. There's a lot of close ties, actually, between Yemeni affairs and Somali affairs. That's something that goes back hundreds, if not thousands, of years. They're very close across the Red Sea from each other, so there's kind of a little bit of interplay there. And also, both of those conflicts in particular have heavy involvement by American Muslims. In the case of Somalia, that's because there's a lot of American Somalis, you know, people who are descended from Somali refugees who have gone back there to get involved because there's this big struggle for control in Somalia. But I don't see these as valid comparisons to the situation in Syria. To quickly recap that, basically, we've got a three-way civil war in Syria. There's the so-called moderate rebels. We'll get to that in a second. There's the Syrian government that's opposed by the United States. And there's ISIS, which is opposed by the United States. And ISIS and the Syrian government sort of were working together secretly, but then are no longer working together. And the Syrian government's been doing airstrikes on them. There's a lot of coverage of that on the arsenalfordemocracy.com blog if you want more information on that. But essentially, Syria has said very clearly, we do not want American airstrikes, on ISIS targets without our cooperation and intelligence and consent. And you can say, well, who cares about the Syrian government, because we don't care what they liked either. And a year ago, we were about to bomb them if they hadn't done that deal with, you know, via Russia and everything with the chemical weapons. But the reality of the situation is that Syria has a functioning air force. It's not, you know, anywhere near as good as the U.S. Air Force, but it's not nothing. They have various air defense systems. They have a city and an air base in the middle of ISIS territory that they control. And they're saying that this will be considered a fundamental violation of sovereignty. Now, with Pakistan, you know, which I mentioned that might be a more apt comparison, the government continually says, we didn't approve these airstrikes, they're violating our sovereignty, but then they allow drone bases in Pakistan and things like that. And there's various documents that come out in some of these leaks periodically saying that, no, in fact, the Pakistani government secretly gave permission for these airstrikes. That's just not the case with Syria, and the U.S. is making very clear that they won't be working with the Syrian government at all. We're having a lot of trouble coming up with anybody to back us, even our allies in the region, on these, you know, unilateral, outside the United Nations airstrikes against Syria. Russia, which also opposes ISIS and strongly backs the Syrian government, very opposed to this situation. And they're certainly, in the aftermath of the situation in Crimea and eastern Ukraine, they're not exactly looking to go through the UN Security Council for things these days, which is a big turnaround from a year ago. But the reality is that we're going to be going into hostile territory to conduct these open-ended airstrikes that, similar to Yemen and Somalia, they haven't really solved the situation in either of those countries. But in the situations with Yemen and Somalia, at minimum, we had cooperation from the Yemeni government. We had cooperation from the Somali government when it existed, which is always questionable. You know, they're always in coordination with local authorities. In fact, the coordination was so strong and unpopular in Yemen that it helped bring down the Yemen government during the Arab Spring Revolution. But those airstrikes have continued, although at somewhat of a lesser rate. So that's kind of, you know, I don't see this as a great comparison in the first place, but I also don't see that as a reassuring comparison, because those operations haven't really solved anything, and they're just really open-ended and seem to be just going on and on without any particular end in sight or plan. They're just periodically, you know, as the sort of offensive lingo goes with these drone strikes, you know, they're referred to as bug splats, because that's what they look like on the screen. And of course, those are people dying. And a lot of them, as Greg and I have talked about on previous episodes, those are, you know, innocent people that are caught in the wrong place. But, you know, what are you going to do? Just have ongoing bug splats of ISIS leaders and their Humvees or whatever? Is that actually going to solve the problem? Probably not. And it's now it's just widening this situation over the border from Iraq, where, you know, as Persephone and I talked about previously, that's about managing and containing the situation. This is now just widening it out and saying, oh yeah, we're going to go after these guys everywhere that they might be, anywhere, no matter what, with no limitations, no plan, no vision, no end in sight. I mean, how is that possibly supposed to be reassuring to us? Persephone, I want to get you in first on this. What was your reaction to this policy announcement, and also specifically this angle here with the Somalia and Yemen comparisons?
Well, I mean, it's clearly about emphasizing that, because, I mean, a big part of, you know, Obama's initial, of course, platform when running was, you know, ending the war in Iraq. And so I think that this announcement is about distancing this from that, and also about emphasizing that there will not be American soldiers, you know, fighting on the ground there. So his motives are pretty clear, but it's definitely not a very valid comparison. I mean, it's going to be a completely different situation. There's the risk of retaliation in the future, maybe not right now in the middle of the war, but, you know, at some point. It's not establishing a good relationship with whoever ends up ultimately in control, although I don't think that we necessarily want to be overly concerned. I don't think we need to be overly concerned with, you know, establishing like a friendship or whatever. I don't think that's realistic or a good idea, but we certainly don't want to be actively hostile to pretty much every side of this story.
Right. So, okay. So Persephone, looking at the long-range retaliation prospects in general, you know, promoting anti-American sentiments and things like that, I think that's a pretty solid concern at this point. Nate, I don't know if you remember this, but in the 2011 operation, the NATO operation in Libya, that was Operation Odyssey Dawn, they were trying to put in a UN-authorized no-fly zone against the Libyan government. And the first thing that they did in Libya was to take out all of the aircraft they could find that were on the ground, the Libyan aircraft, and also to take out radar defense detection systems and air defense systems in Libya. And the idea there was to prevent NATO planes from being shot down while maintaining this no-fly zone. Now, they're not saying they're going to have a no-fly zone in Syria, which I think is interesting, because they basically don't want to prevent the Syrian government, even if they're not working with them, they don't want to prevent them from bombing these ISIS targets that they've started attacking. But, you know, what do you think about this idea that, unlike Somalia or Yemen, even if those governments, quote-unquote governments, opposed U.S. actions, they can't do anything about it. They can't hit back. What do you think that introduces a new dynamic here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is what differentiates these situations, or the current struggle against ISIS compared to, I guess, you know, Al-Shabaab. You know, you have all the various militant groups, Al-Qaeda in Yemen. It wasn't quite the same situation where you're facing up against a well-funded, well-disciplined paramilitary terrorist organization like ISIS, or a country with its own military like Syria. Although, Bill, I disagree with you a little bit that we're not, as you said in the opening, you know, sort of no end in sight, just no definition of the mission or anything like that. I think that there's there's certainly tremendous concerns about, you know, various types of mission creep and what the impact of this decision to have, you know, some sort of targeted operation against these groups and against Syria. So there's the various possibility that, you know, set off one thing and it leads to a sort of chain reaction that has profound impact in the region. You know, we saw that in Iraq. So I wouldn't say that it's completely well-defined or anything like that. But I also think that I think Obama learned his lesson pretty strongly in, you know, getting out of Iraq, just no longer having to deal with the impact of U.S. troops being there. I think he's found in Afghanistan that it's not going nearly as smoothly as, you know, he probably would have wanted it to. And now he's looking at a situation where, you know, the current, I wouldn't say threat, but the strategic difficulties proposed by both Syria's sort of festering, simmering civil war and state failure and, you know, the rise of the Islamic State, these are actually fairly serious geostrategic events, would you say, Bill? They're not like an insignificant terror group in the desert. So.
They are, but I don't know that they're necessarily only defeatable by U.S. air power or whatever.
No,
I think
only,
that Syria's
the thing is with the revolution in military technology that's happened over the past several decades, that we're now in a situation where you can, and this is one of the dangers of it, but it's so easy. It's so easy to just send some airstrikes, send some drones, send some, you know, cruise missiles, do whatever you need to sort of try to take out the command infrastructure or, you know, air defense systems of some of these groups. And, you know, I think it's very difficult for President Obama or any future American president to resist that temptation of just trying to snipe at some of these, you know, clearly defined enemies. And, you know, you worry about pretty much, you know, we've seen, you know, in Pakistan try to blow up a Al-Qaeda leadership meeting and you hit a wedding. You know, there are all these incidents where these quote-unquote bug splats are, in fact, not nearly close to what they were intended to be, and you have innocent children and innocent villagers just being obliterated because they were mistaken for terrorists. So I think it's an extremely difficult situation, but I also don't think that we're completely rudderless here and that we're, you know, about to be sucked into a ground war with Syria and we're going to go back into Iraq and we're going to be sucked into another quagmire. I think this is going to be a situation kind of like the war on terror where we're just sort of sniping at random people at all sorts of corners of the globe, and it's not clear when it's going to end, and it's not clear when, you know, what things are going to do. But it's also, we're not just throwing our troops necessarily wherever we can and then not, you know, having a plan to get them out.
Are we letting ourselves be dictated too much by basically desert dudes with swords chopping people's heads off periodically?
I mean, our foreign policy has been extremely reactionary over the past day. I mean, just 9/11, we didn't see that coming. And then our entire foreign policy for the next decade was, oh, we have to defeat the terrorists and kill bin Laden, and oh, Iraq too, because Iraq has somehow something to do with this. I don't exactly know how. It was never clear, but apparently we had to go to Iraq as well. So, yeah, it's reactionary, and, you know, Obama's, you know, still reactionary. But I think one of the reasons that Obama is acting like that is because he doesn't want to get sucked into another war. I mean, I think that was one of his things that he thought that should be part of his legacy. You know, from the Bush administration, my administration is trying to scale back America's military engagement. So I don't think he necessarily wants to do this. In fact, I don't really think he wanted to do Libya all that much. But there's sort of like an inexorable logic to the American military apparatus that these kind of things will happen almost regardless of who's the president, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't know. I'm not extremely worried at this point. If we start like in an ongoing, like months long air barrages, and, you know, then you got the military advisors, and then you got, you know, blah, 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 blah. If that starts happening, I'll start growing very concerned. Right now, I think some drone strikes, some airstrikes, I don't think that's necessarily going to be supremely inconvenient for the U.S. or getting the U.S. sucked deeply in, but it's definitely something to be pretty concerned about.
Now, we've already spent, I think, like $500 million on operations in Iraq just since June.
Yeah.
Persephone, what's your take on this inexorable, you know, the inevitability of American interventionism and the reactionary element?
I don't necessarily think that it's a good idea to talk in terms of inevitable. I think that that's certainly the direction things have been going, but I don't think that necessarily means that it's how things have to go. I think that the U.S. does often kind of end up sucked into these things because that's just where everybody turns and looks. But I don't think that that means that it is up to the U.S. to get physically involved in all these disputes. And there are certainly plenty of disputes that it does not get involved in.
Very quickly, before we end this segment, thoughts on this other part of his plan, the oft-cited, we're going to arm and train the moderate rebels, quote-unquote moderate rebels, in Syria, revitalizing that third side of the war that has almost completely been defeated at this point and has been driven back to Aleppo. Yeah, Free Syrian Army or various other things. I mean, Nusra Front, but I don't think we want to include them because they're al-Qaeda affiliates who just kidnapped UN peacekeepers.
I mean, sure, arm and train them if you want them to come back in 10 years and use all the things that we provided them with against us.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's really proven that they exist or have any viable chance of doing anything. I think that war's over at this point.
Yeah, I feel like that was more like a couple months ago when they were not completely...
Or a couple of years ago.
On their deathbed. Yeah, but when the arms started, Obama made that announcement, you know, you could say that maybe he didn't move fast enough on that, whether you think that's a good idea or not. I mean, as Persephone just noted, there's always the chance that the student groups that you decide to fund kind of come back as the Taliban in a couple of years, so.
That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode. Nate, thank you for being in studio with me.
Thanks, Bill.
And Persephone on the line, thanks for being here.
Anytime.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening to Arsenal for Democracy. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Wednesdays. You can also hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. Special thanks to my voiceover man, Justin. You can follow his work at the Digitized Ramblings of an 8-Bit Animal from 8BitAnimal.com. You can get additional commentary at ArsenalForDemocracy.com daily, as well as links to articles discussed today. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message. Good night.